You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, everybody. And I'm so happy this afternoon because Professor Howard Schwaber of the University of Wisconsin, Madison, is sticking around for one more segment because where we got at the end of the last hour was so important, and I didn't want to rush through the point with you, Professor. You know, we began by talking about Donald Trump basically saying he can murder people in international waters simply because he says he can, and courts not being able to review it and Congress not being able to ask any questions about it. So again, an unfettered right to commit murder and have nobody ask anything about it. You see those same arguments playing out when we look at the National Guard troop deployments, which have specific facts which must be true in order for the president to have the power to federalize the Guard in the manner that Trump is attempting to do in California, Oregon, Illinois, and beyond. And again, Trump saying in court cases, you don't get to ask me, you can't demand the proof, and you can't because it's a political question. And so then when you turn to the political arm of our government, Congress, that other, you know, arm of government that's supposed to exercise a check and balance the executive branch, Congress, when Congress asks questions about the evidence or facts or the legal frameworks, they also are rebuffed by the Trump administration. And now we have courts saying, it looks like the Trump administration is lying about some of these facts. We have video footage coming out in literal droves, almost seemingly daily, contradicted claims being made by ICE officials and DHS officials, by Secretary Noem herself. In other words, they're lying about a lot of stuff. And yet there doesn't seem to be any recourse, anyone that can bring the Trump administration to heel. And when we turn that analysis and we look at it in terms of the prosecutions that are happening, the prosecutions of New York AG Letitia James, of former FBI Director Jim Comey, a prosecution that's about to start sometime this week, former National Security Advisor John Bolton, whom, again, Donald Trump picked. All of these people have been listed in enemies lists. And I, with you, just before we hit the top of the hour, was reminded of what former Supreme Court Justice Robert Jackson said about federal prosecutors. He said this: the prosecutor cannot pick some person whom he dislikes and desires to embarrass, or select some group of unpopular person and then look for the crime that they have may have committed. That is the greatest danger of the abuse of prosecuting power. And you, Howard, were reminding us of another case that Justice Jackson had worked on that actually has been cited favorably or in support of the Trump administration's arguments. Remind folks what Korematsu is, how it came about, and what Justice Jackson had to say in that circumstance.
Right, so Korematsu comes out of the horrifying practice during World War II by which the United States government locked up 140,000 people of Japanese descent in camps in brutal conditions based on what even at the time people knew was faked intelligence. And what subsequently was revealed to be lies brought by the military. The Supreme Court reviewed that action in 1944. And it was really interesting. The majority said, look, we accept the government's justification because they're relying on military intelligence that we don't have access to. Jackson wrote a frightening opinion in response, a dissenting opinion, in which he basically said, do it if you have to, but don't ask us to make it legal. And what he said was, a military emergency will probably only last as long as there's a war. But if we establish a principle that a president has unfettered discretion to lock people in camps or take warlike acts without any effective review by a court, that principle will lie around like a loaded weapon ready to be picked up. And that's the principle that, like a loaded weapon, the Trump administration has picked up. That's precisely the position they're arguing, that you cannot question our assessment of the facts because you just have to take our word for it. Jackson also said something else. I mean, we're talking right now about these vindictive prosecutions, which are indeed horrifying, but we're talking about it in the context of the invocation of emergency powers and identification of enemy combatants. When President Truman tried to seize control of the steel industry, the Supreme Court stopped him And in a concurring opinion, Jackson wrote a wonderful line. He said, emergency powers tend to engender emergencies. That's the problem with these assertions of principle. And if you're a devout Trump supporter, that shouldn't change the fact that you don't want to see some future president, whom you might not like as well, to have, you know, having these same powers. And in the past, we have seen the Supreme Court stand up. After 9/11, initially the Bush administration proposed a set of rules by which the president would have had the authority to individually and personally designate people as enemy combatants by name. And that was stopped by the courts and by Congress. The last hope we have at the moment is the Roberts Court. And I'm sad to say, I do not have great confidence that for the reasons we talked about earlier, that the Roberts Court will stand up to Trump the way that even after the events of 9/11, the Rehnquist Court, not a liberal court by anyone's measure, right, was willing to stand up to George W. Bush.
And I remember I was in law school when that argument was being made. And I remember how basically freaked out all of my professors were, who spanned the political spectrum. They could see this is quite a dangerous moment. And we need limits on presidential power. And the place that we need those limits most dearly is when it comes to warlike powers, when it comes to deploying the military, when it comes to assertions or declarations that certain groups or people are the enemy from within, and then the use of law enforcement to go after those people. Harkening back again to what Justice Jackson wrote in the speech in 1940 about the federal prosecutor, a prosecutor stands a fair chance of finding at least a technical violation of some sort on the part of almost anyone. In such a case, it is not a question of discovering the commission of crime and then looking for the man who has committed it. It's a question of picking the man and then searching the law books or putting investigators to work to pin some offense on him. That is what Donald Trump is doing. It's a complete inversion of how law enforcement is supposed to work. And when you see that inversion, we need conservatives of good faith, of which there have been many that have worked in federal law enforcement and served as judges appointed by Republican presidents, that are pointing this out and saying, these are dictatorial powers that threaten every American, even if you happen to support this guy right now. And Howard, this reminded me of yet another sort of oft-quoted saying. Perhaps a better way for me to put this is, it's literally the motto of the Department of Justice. Like, this is what is on the walls of the DOJ. It's a shortened version of this quote, but this was another former Supreme Court justice, Justice Sutherland, in a 1935 case. Everybody remember, you know, we're talking about the 30s and the 40s, what was going on there in Berger versus United States. Now, we'll set aside for the moment that Justice Sutherland has a bit of a checkered history and didn't always see the light in all of his Supreme Court decisions. But this he got right. Here's the full quote. The United States attorney, meaning the federal prosecutor, is the representative not of an ordinary party to a controversy, but of a sovereignty whose obligation to govern impartially is as compelling as its obligation to govern at all, and whose interest, therefore, in a criminal prosecution is not that it shall win a case, but that justice shall be done. Not what we're seeing right now.
That is a proposition I don't think Pam Bondi remotely understands.
Yeah. To say the very least about it.
Pretty much the least.
And making this even all the more horrifying, Howard, briefly, let's refresh everyone's recollection about what habeas corpus is and why it is absolutely essential in a democracy. What is habeas corpus?
Habeas corpus also used to be known in England as the Great Writ. It's an order issued by a court. It literally means produce the man.
An
order issued by a court saying, bring us out the person that you're holding in custody and explain to us why you're holding that person. It stands outside of the regular criminal justice system. This is when other appeals have been exhausted and failed, when the government has refused to comply with other orders. This one is the final remedy, and it's the final ultimate rule that says that if there's one thing government can never, ever do, it's lock somebody up without any good reason or explanation and without being answerable to anyone. Absolutely shockingly, It is not shocking to me that President Trump really was asked about habeas corpus and didn't know what it was. I think he said, who is that guy?
Yes,
he did. He thought it was a person's name. But even more shocking are statements from Trump officials showing that they have no idea what the concept of habeas corpus is about, why it is important, or even that it exists, which just goes to the profound lawlessness of this administration. It's not just that they're willing to ignore the law or violate the law. They just don't care about it at all.
They don't care about it enough to actually know what it is.
They don't even know what it is.
Here's that sound, Cal, this is going to be cut 38, of Trump being asked about habeas corpus. By the way, the journalist is a friendly MAGA journalist trying to give him a gimme, and he fumbles it. Take a listen to this.
Have you given any more thought to possibly suspending habeas corpus to not only deal with these insurrectionists across the nation, but also to continue rapidly deporting illegal aliens?
Yeah, is it been suspending who?
Habeas corpus. So, oh,
I don't know. I'd rather leave that to Christie. What do you think?
No, sir. I haven't been a part of any discussions on that.
And if I were, sir, I wouldn't have any idea what's being discussed, as clearly you don't either. This is Christie Noem, the week of May 18th, I believe during her confirmation hearing, being asked about habeas corpus because, indeed, you know, they're disappearing people off the streets, including citizens, holding them for days without a phone call or recourse to the legal system. Yeah, you know, the very thing that you would use habeas corpus to have your body produced in a courtroom so that you can be undisappeared and have some, I don't know, due process. Take a listen to Christie Noem during her confirmation hearing.
So, Secretary Noem, what is habeas corpus?
Well, habeas corpus is a constitutional right that the president has to be able to remove people from this country
Excuse me. That's incorrect. Habeas corpus is the legal principle that requires that the government provide a public reason for detaining and imprisoning people. If not for that protection, the government could simply arrest people, including American citizens, and hold them indefinitely for no reason.
Why does this matter right now, Howard?
Well, first of all, I mean, she didn't just get the answer fundamentally wrong initially. She doubled down. She started to say President Reagan invoked this power. I mean, she really was going to lean into it. So first of all, it's just a shocking level of ignorance. And the notion that someone has a position of high responsibility in the United States government that involves security and involves law enforcement and does not understand the most basic concepts of due process. I mean, habeas corpus is as core as it gets. That's shocking in and of itself. The other side of that is she is right that under certain circumstances, a president can order the suspension of habeas corpus. But that gets us right back to what we've been discussing all show long, which is, can anybody ask for what the justification is? And the Trump administration's position all along has been, no one can ask us. We can do these things just because we say so. If that approach is in the future applied to the suspension of the right of habeas corpus, then we really are teetering on the edge of something that looks like an impediment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
To the Civic Media Radio Network, big thanks to Professor Schwaber for being with us for over an hour. And what we're talking about? Yeah, it is real time happening as we speak today. Donald Trump has announced that the U.S. struck another small boat off the waters of Venezuela. The Republican president said Tuesday in a post on social media, this is according to reporting by AP, that six people aboard the vessel were killed in the strike. This is the fifth deadly strike in the Caribbean as the Trump administration continues to assert without evidence, without subjecting its factual claims to any review by Congress or any court or any international body of law, that it is treating drug traffickers, as unlawful combatants. Again, that's garbage. Being a criminal doesn't mean that you are actively engaged in a military conflict with the United States of America. So again, thank you to Professor Schwaber. I want to move on now to an update on the shutdown. We are learning, of course, over the course of the last few days that Russell Vogt, one of the primary architects of Project 2025, is firing thousands of federal workers. And, you know, this is, of course, on top of the DOGE cuts seemingly at random. But what's incredibly interesting about this particular moment is that the president has clearly stated numerous times that basically he's going to use the shutdown as a pretext to target Democratic programs, Democratic or people that may lean towards Democratic candidates that are working in the federal government, that it only will be Democrats working in the federal government who don't get back pay. This is called viewpoint discrimination, and presidents don't get to do this. It's illegal. And all of this, again, there was a massacre, a midnight massacre at the CDC over the weekend. It started late on Friday night. They laid off a number of absolutely key staffers, including people who are basically like outbreak investigators. And all of this, of course, happening while we have one of the largest outbreaks of measles in our nation's history going on. We have measles cases in the state of Wisconsin here at home. It's really bad. And now this week they say, oh, there was a coding error. We didn't mean to fire some of those CDC officials. Incompetence, animus, illegality, whatever it is, this is really, really bad. And it's placing all of us at grave risk for our health and safety. If you've got a kid that's a kiddo that's got special needs, guess what else they just cut to basically nothing, nearly eliminating? The U.S. Department of Education's Office of Special Education and Rehabilitative Services. They fired nearly everyone. So what? There's just no one looking at special education programs or IEPs or any of that stuff in the federal government anymore? My goodness. In a Friday court filing just this past week, the Justice Department said that more than 460 Education Department employees had been laid off. So that's another fifth of the agency's already hamstrung workforce. And nearly 90% of the Education Department overall is furloughed. So if you haven't gotten fired, you're nearly certainly on furlough. I don't know if Donald Trump knows this, but Republicans have kids with special needs too. It's not some Democratic program. It's just people, the people that he's supposed to represent, all of us. And yet, despite that clear requirement of a president to represent all of us, to engage with the law without preference, without favor, to execute the law without favoritism for those that support him or not, the president has affirmed over and over again that he's going to use the shutdown to target Democrats. However, he's figuring out what different employees of the federal government think. By the way, that's scary. Wired reporting that ICE is now going to have a team that's monitoring all social media 24/7 to, I don't know, find out people that disagree. But let's listen to Donald Trump talk about firing Democrats, talk about cutting only Democratic programs, and last but not least, talk about no back pay for Democrats who are furloughed. Again, how they know this might be very, very scary to find out. Let's start with the firing Democrats.
Russell Vogt said the reductions in force have begun related to this shutdown. How many layoffs have you authorized for this first round, and from which agencies?
And it would be Democrat-oriented, because we figure, you know, they started this thing, so they should be Democrat-oriented. It'll be a lot, and we'll announce the numbers over the next couple of days, but it'll be a lot of people, all because of the Democrats. I mean, they want to give $1.5 trillion to people that came into the country.
So we've got him firing Democrats. How they're going to figure that out, I don't know. Let's hear him cutting only Democrat programs.
And we'll be making cuts that will be permanent. And we're only going to cut Democrat programs, I hate to tell you. I guess that's...
Yep. Again, illegal. And last but not least, no back pay, but no back pages for those Dems.
Is it the White House's position that furloughed workers should be paid for their back pay?
I would say it depends on who we're talking about. I can tell you this, the Democrats have put a lot of people in great risk and jeopardy, but it really depends on who you're talking about. But for the most part, we're going to take care of our people. There are some people that really don't deserve to be taken care of, and we'll take care of them in a different way. Okay? Thank you.
Oh, yeah, by firing them. This is not how the federal government should work. It is illegal. It is suppression of people's freedom of thought. And when we come back, I talk about the thing that I promised to talk with you about, this perversion of Christianity deployed by MAGA and Donald Trump. It ain't Christian. And by the way, our country wasn't founded as a Christian nation either. We discuss next, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Maggie Dawn, you are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to Professor Schwaber for being with us for over an hour. And what we're talking about, yeah, it is real time happening as we speak today. Donald Trump has announced that the U.S. struck another small boat off the waters of Venezuela. The Republican president said Tuesday in a post on social media, this is according to reporting by AP, that six people aboard the vessel were killed in the strike. This is the fifth deadly strike in the Caribbean as the Trump administration continues to assert without evidence, without subjecting its factual claims to any review by Congress or any court or any international body of law, that it is treating drug traffickers, as unlawful combatants. Again, that's garbage. Being a criminal doesn't mean that you are actively engaged in a military conflict with the United States of America. So again, thank you to Professor Schwaber. I want to move on now to an update on the shutdown. We are learning, of course, over the course of the last few days that Russell Vogt, one of the primary architects of Project 2025, is firing thousands of federal workers. You know, this is, of course, on top of the DOGE cuts seemingly at random. But what's incredibly interesting about this particular moment is that the president has a for Charlie Kirk. So I think we need, again, to like check ourselves, remember what we're talking about, the things that people have said, and go into this with clear eyes. And let's just start with, you know, the things that Donald Trump has said. And I would challenge anyone here, especially if you're a Christian, which means you believe in the word of Jesus Christ as the Lord and our Savior, the Son of God, you believe in the New Testament, please, can you point me to the parts in the New Testament when Christ denigrates and uses bigoted language to talk about immigrants and poor people? I'd really, really like that biblical citation because it doesn't exist. And yet, evangelicals support Donald Trump, who repeats lie after lie after lie and uses phrases that were used and promoted and part of the propaganda machine of Nazis in Germany. Here's Donald Trump lying about immigrants.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating.
Yeah, that's a lie.
They're
okay?
Eating the pets.
It's not only insane, it's despicable, it's racist, it's bigoted, it's fear-mongering. Again, please give me some New Testament citations. And of course, here's Donald Trump using Nazi rhetoric about immigrants.
They're poisoning the blood of our country. That's what they've done. They poison mental institutions and prisons all over the world, not just in South America, not just the three or four countries.
I mean,
we think
shame
about,
on this guy.
But all over the world.
Yeah, but hey, Donald, where was it that Jesus Christ talked about poisoning the blood when he was referring to poor people or immigrants? Yeah, well, right. It doesn't exist. But let's remember, you know, of all conservative Republican heroes, perhaps none until those guys venerated as much as Ronald Reagan. And yet, this is what Ronald Reagan had to say back in 1985 when he signed the Immigrant Reform and Control Act and gave amnesty to nearly 3 million immigrants when he signed it. Listen to what Reagan said about immigrants.
Our objective is only to establish a reasonable, fair, orderly, and secure system of immigration into this country and not to discriminate in any way against particular nations or people.
So no fly list, no admittance list from Reagan, but Trump does that. And speaking of Charlie Kirk, let us not forget the vile things that this man has said. I'm not going to listen to the whole thing because it's far too long, but just a quick refresher. Listen here.
Saying we're going to just raise tax on the billionaires, that statement, you just violated 2 out of the 10 commandments.
That's not true.
Thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not covet.
How
we're
going to
take
stealing?
Other people's money.
How is that stealing?
Because it's their money.
We live in a society that is run by taxes. How is that stealing?
Well, taxations are a form of theft, definitionally, because it's not the government's money.
Oh, my gosh.
It is private property.
Okay, wrap this. Not quite the Kirk sound I was going for, but let me talk about this, okay? Christianity and what Jesus taught is not compatible with prosperity theology, which is the idea that if you are rich, it's because you're good, and if you're poor, it's because you're sinful and bad. Okay, but that's been the underlying tenet. So that's Charlie Kirk saying it is literally a sin to tax wealthy people. Mark 12:17. Then Jesus said to them, give back to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. Or this theologian, was the earth made, this is a theologian by the name of Gerard Winstanley, was the earth made to preserve a few covetous, proud men to live at ease and for them to bag and burn up the treasures of the earth from others that these may beg or starve in a fruitful land? Or was it made to preserve all children? Or this Catholic saint, Saint Basil the Great, the bread which you do not use is the bread of the hungry. The garment hanging in your wardrobe is the garment of him who is naked. The shoes you do not wear are the shoes of the one who is barefoot. The money that you keep locked away is the money of the poor. The acts of charity that you do not perform are so many injustices that you commit. So on top of the racism and the bigotry and the misogyny, we are hearing in modern day Republicanism this idea that it is against God to tax rich people. Why? Because poor people are bad, morally suspect, they're takers, they're freeloaders. That is morally objectionable. That idea. It is directly contrary to what Jesus says over and over and over again in the Bible. And let's take a listen. We're going to go to Cut 98, Cal. This is Pope Leo. He was asked a question, you'll hear it, I believe, by a journalist about Senator Dick Durbin and his pro-choice stance. But the Pope addresses immigrants and the poor and those in need. Let's
just
take
wanted
a
to ask one thing that has become a bit of a divisive subject in the U.S. right now, with Cardinal Supich giving an award to Senator Durbin. Some people of faith are having a hard time with understanding this because he is he's for legalized abortion. How would you help people of faith right now decipher that, feel about that, and how do you feel about that?
I'm not terribly familiar with the particular case. I think that it's very important to look at the overall work that a senator has done during, if I'm not mistaken, 40 years of service in the United States Senate. I understand the difficulty and the tensions, but I think, as I myself have spoken in the past, to look at many issues that are related to what is the teaching of the church. Someone who says I'm against abortion but says I'm in favor of the death penalty is not really pro-life. So someone who says that I'm against abortion but I'm in agreement with the inhuman treatment of immigrants who are in the United States, I don't know if that's pro-life. So they're very complex issues. I don't know if anyone has all the truth on them, but I would ask first and foremost that there be greater respect for one another and that we search together both as human beings, in that case as American citizens or citizens of the state of Illinois, as well as Catholics, to say we need to, you know, really look closely at all of these ethical issues and to find the way forward as church. Church teaching on each one of those issues is very clear.
Yeah, it's very clear. Except to Charlie Kirk, except to Donald Trump, except to apparently evangelicals, except to all of the people that vote for Donald Trump and claim him as some sort of religious martyr. The same about Kirk. And let's be clear about this. The United States was not founded as a Christian nation. And there's a pretty obvious reason for this, by the way. America wanted freedom from Britain. Because in Britain, they had kings who kept their power by genetic lineage and asserted their right to govern, not based on rationality or better policies or their service to their subjects, but based on divinity, the divine right of kings. I am, therefore, I govern and control because of my bloodline, was selected by God. Inherent within the founders was this idea that we can't be a Christian nation because that belief they had seen over and over and over again was perverted to incredible human suffering. The Inquisition, of course, the Crusades, and indeed the oppression they felt from the King of England. So yeah, America's not a Christian nation. It was never founded to be that way. One of the favorite things that I hear from righties about that is, oh, well, in the Constitution, they talk about in the year of our Lord, Anno Domini. That is so stupid. It's basically like saying when First Nation people, Native Americans, learned to speak English so that they could talk with the Puritans and settlers, that they, by speaking English, agreed to have their land stripped from them and be massacred because they, you know, could speak English. It's just the way that years were cited back then. But reading the actual Constitution makes it pretty clear. Article 6, Clause 3, you cannot have a religious test for those holding office. Madison, who wrote the Bill of Rights, put first in the Bill of Rights that the state shall make no law establishing religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And he said very clearly that the separation of church and state is to keep these from these shores the ceaseless strife that has soaked the soil of Europe in blood for centuries. Right? Exactly what I was saying. Look at our other founders. George Washington warned that the government of the United States should be free from the influence of clergy. Thomas Paine was hostile to Christianity and religious institutions. Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin were deists, but not defined Christians. They just believed in a creator, but not a personal interventionist God that picks winners and losers. Jefferson even wrote his own version of the Bible, for crying out loud. He omitted sort of the miraculous and the fantastical and all the supernatural elements to just focus on the moral teachings of Jesus. Now, of course, some of our founders were devout Christians, but many were not. Most were Enlightenment, free thinkers, rationalists who had private beliefs that differed from Christianity. And oh, by the way, lest we forget about the 1797 Treaty of Tripoli, which went into effect on June 10th, 1797, was passed unanimously without debate by Congress on June 7th, that said this: the government of the United States is in no sense founded on the Christian religion. When we come back, I continue debunking the mythology of prosperity theology and the claim to Christianity by those like Charlie Kirk and Donald Trump as the falsehood, as the false God that it is. Idolatry, not Christianity, when we come back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I've been spending this last half hour trying to deal with what I will always find to be one of the most problematic elements of MAGA, and that is the devotion of evangelical Christians and their co-opting of both patriotism, but attended to that, Christianity writ large. Like, they are the Christians. And it's just not true. The policies of MAGA, the language of MAGA, the language, the rhetoric, all of it could not be more contrary to Jesus's teaching. Here's what Pope Francis, the Pope before this one, had to say. The church, like a mother, accompanies those who are walking. This is in the document titled Dyslexite. I have loved you. She knows that in every rejected migrant, it is Christ himself who knocks at the door of the community. Where the world sees threats, the church sees children. Where walls are built, she builds bridges. And all of this in veneration of, again, Charlie Kirk, who traded in the most debased kind of bigotry, preying on people's fears, on our subconscious biases that threaten to divide America at this critical point in time. But at the head of this beast is Donald Trump, who by his own words and, yes, deeds, is no Christian by any measure. Let us refresh our recollections. Donald Trump, back in July of 2015, basically said that he is infallible, you know, like a king who reigns by divine right. Listen to this.
Why do I have to, you know, repent? Why do I have to ask for forgiveness if you're not making mistakes?
What? And of course, Donald Trump to Frank Luntz years ago that he, of course, because he doesn't make any mistakes, needs no forgiveness. Because what? In his mind, he is a king reigning in his divine right. Here's Trump saying, I don't need to ask for forgiveness.
But have you ever asked God for forgiveness?
I'm not sure I have. I just go and try and do a better job from there. I don't think so. I think if I do something wrong,
blah, 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 blah. Yeah, that means you're not a Christian. The defining characteristic of Christianity is the idea that your soul can be saved by contritely and humbly asking God for forgiveness. But Trump can't even name a Bible verse that he likes, for crying out loud. Remember this?
Okay. You mentioned the Bible. You've been talking about how it's your favorite book. And you said, I think last night in Iowa, some people are surprised that you say that. I'm wondering what one or two of your most favored Bible verses are.
Well,
and why.
I wouldn't want to get into it because to me that's very personal. You know, when I talk about the Bible, it's very personal. So I don't want to get into verses.
Has no idea that you think about or cite.
The Bible means a lot to me, but I don't want to get
just
into
the whole thing.
Papers.
Like Sarah Palin, which papers? I just read all the papers. You know, those things with words written on them. And this, just 2 days ago from Donald Trump, aboard Air Force One, if a man doesn't ask for forgiveness, thinks he makes no mistakes, wants to be treated as a despot, as a king serving in his divine right with no limitations on his plenary authority to kill at will, to deploy troops on his people by making up lies. Yeah, well, Trump finally put it together for us. Take a listen. Cut 14.
You talked about how you hope to end the war in Ukraine because it might help you get into heaven. How does this help? Does this help?
I mean, you know, I'm being a little cute. I don't think there's anything going to get me in heaven, okay? I really don't. I think I'm not maybe heaven bound. I may be in heaven right now as we fly in Air Force One. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make heaven.
Did you catch that he equates heaven with his absolute power and authority? Yeah, this is what the founders were worried about. A president with immunity from the most debased criminal acts, a party that lies about the reality of what's happening, who blames others for their failings, who engages personal attacks, who engages in, again, the most debased kind of bigotry to what? To distract us from what is really going on. one of the most wealthiest families in the world, is seizing absolute power. And in case you didn't believe me about the no taxes thing, just here's the New Jersey gubernatorial candidate on that very point.
Taxes are on the table, but I'd be careful of millionaire taxes. They're employing us. They're
so
also
new taxes are on the table in New Jersey in your administration?
Well, you have to look at it. You have to look at the whole
thing.
Don't
tax
but what I'm
the,
saying
the millionaires.
Is
millionaires.
We can't just beat up the millionaires. The millionaires many times are our employers. They're employing us.
The same old saw. They're also sitting, not the millionaires so much as the 100 millionaires, the mega corporations, the billions, just sitting on their money, not working. Track back and look at the history of authoritarianism and dictators in this world, and you will always find a claim to moral superiority based on their identification with some religious belief. Cloaking themselves in religion to justify, to say, my religion requires the subjugation of these people or that. But that is not what this country is supposed to be about, and it's certainly not what Christianity was about or is about. Again, notwithstanding the point that, again, our country not founded as a Christian nation. I'm going to leave you with this. This is Proverbs 31, verses 8 through 9. Speak up for those who have no voice, for the justice of all who are dispossessed. Speak up, judge righteously, and defend the cause of the oppressed and the needy. MAGA doesn't do any of that. It's going to do it for me, folks. Go Brewers. My goodness, fingers crossed here. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. And it's always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.